In a few days, Josh's arm was no longer sore. All that remained was a little stiffness. He had read all the books and impatiently watched Ramon cripple around with a crude crutch he had whittled out of a limb, wishing the leg would hurry and heal so they could be on their way. Muley didn't care. He was having a good time with the dogs. At the sound, instinctively, Josh grabbed up the rifle he had brought from San Jacinto.
Josh! There's people coming. I seen them. There's people and horses and mules and some wagons.
Not soldiers? Not Mexicans?
I seen a couple women.
Stay put. If they're Texans and see you, they're apt to shoot first and ask about you later.
You reckon they'll come fighting, Josh? I already had enough fighting. I sure don't want no more.
Chances are it's the man who owns this place. Come back to claim his own.
Oh, reckon he'll be mad because we've been staying here, eating his victuals.
He'll understand. Anyway, that Mexican rifle we're leaving will pay for all the victuals we could eat if we stayed a month. We ain't killed none of his laying hens or none of his sows. We left the breeding stock alone.
Three wagons moved out of a patch of cane and into the open meadow, in good view. Besides the teams, Josh figured there must be a dozen or so extra horses, some running loose, some being ridden by men and boys, one by a little girl. A small boy rode a gray mule. A man in the lead raised his hand, and the procession stopped. The man touched heels to his horse and rode forward in a slow trot, leaving the others behind him. At the distance, Josh couldn't see their guns, but he had a feeling they bristled on those wagons like cactus. 50 yards from the cabin, the rider slowed to a walk and came in warily.
Look there, Josh. He's got a rifle across his lap.
I see it. Stand easy. Try to grin at him, why don't you?
The rider was tall and gaunt in ragged homespun. Josh took him to be middle-aged until he came close enough for a look at his face. He was a young man. War and hard times had put years on his shoulders that the calendar didn't account for, Josh reasoned. Big hands, sun-bleached eyes. Farmer, Josh figured, by the look of him. Most people were in this country. The rider held his left hand up as a sign his intentions were peaceful, but his right hand still gripped the rifle. Josh got a cold feeling he knew how to use it, and well.
Howdy. Get down and rest yourself.
Who be you, mister?
My name's Joshua Buckaloo. This here is Muley Dodd.
Names don't mean nothing. I mean, how come you here? This your place?
Nope. Thought maybe it was yours. We was on our way home from San Jacinto.
How do I know you was at San Jacinto?
I just told you.
If you was there, maybe you can tell me which wing Lamar's cavalry took.
The right.
And what horse was General Sam riding when the charge started?
Big white stallion? I don't know what they called him.
They called him Saracen. And I thought we was about the first to come back this-a-way. When we seen your tracks dried in the mud, we figured you might be some kind of stragglers or renegades, foraging around to see what you could steal. You already been here some days, I take it.
We left pretty soon after the battle. We got this far and ran into a Mexican patrol.
The patrol?
That was some days ago. I expect it's clear enough now, of Mexicans anyway.
Folks in them wagons, they need a good night's rest. Horses need a feed.
They can get it here. Mexicans must have missed this place.
I don't expect they missed many. Yeah. My name's O.C. Quitman. When you get that wound at San Jacinto?
Saber cut. About healed now.
We all lost something to Santa Ana. I wish they'd let us hang him. Him and all the rest of them. I wish there was dead Mexicans strung on every tree limb from here to the Rio Grande.
A shudder ran down Josh's back as he sensed the depth of Quitman's hatred.
Man, whatever you lost, it must have been really something.
Quitman waved and the wagons moved again, the lead wagon's canvas sagging and uneven. Towering in the seat, hunched over the leather lines, was a big, square-shouldered, middle-aged farmer. His raw-boned wife sat beside him, her face all but hidden beneath a sagging bonnet. Halting his team, the big farmer handed the reins to the woman and climbed down, walking toward Josh, extending a huge hand that looked as if it could smite a mule to its knees.
Howdy, friend. We're sure glad to see a new face after all these days. My name's Aaron Provost. This here your place?
Nope. My friends and I was on our way home from San Jacinto. We stopped to rest and heal up.
We was a little concerned at first over who you might be, but you got a good face.
You got a lot of people here.
Well, that yonder is my wife, Rebecca. Them youngins you hear whooping and hollering back there with the stock. Well, the missus and I are responsible for all of them but one. Lord's been more bountiful with children than he has with some of the other blessings. Fellers on that middle wagon, they're Wiley McAfee and his partner Dent Sessom. The last wagon yonder, it belongs to O.C. Quitman.
I suppose that's Mrs. Quitman on the wagon, handling the team.
No, it's a widow Winslow, Heather Winslow. Husband fell to the Mexicans a while back. O.C. let her have the borrow of his wagon. Now that lad on the gray mule, he belongs to O.C.
How far y'all going?
Oh, long ways yet. Rebecca and me, we had a place up on the Colorado. The Quitmans, the Winslows, they was all nearby. Sessom and McAfee, they got no land as yet. They're just looking.
You got four men who can shoot if it becomes necessary.
Five. My eldest Daniel ain't but 14, but he's a right pert shot when he has to be.
He might have to be. Last I knew, Comanches was prowling the western country, looking for easy pickings. Didn't take them long to find out about the war. Them slow wagons make a good target of you.
Which way was you headed, Buckaloo?
West.
If you was to join up with us, that'd be seven guns.
Eight. We got one more man in the cabin. Mexican patrol put a bullet in his leg.
Two dusty, lanky men in homespun and buckskins, Dent Sessom and Wiley McAfee, shared a whiskey jug, then climbed down from the second wagon and lazily stretched themselves, one of them scratching his ribs. The other hungrily eyed the chickens. They didn't offer the jug to anyone else. Josh featured them as being likely to spend a lot more time in the woods than in the fields. The woman on the third wagon had her face shaded by a large bonnet similar to Mrs. Provost's, but when she turned toward Josh, he caught a glimpse of her features. He judged she was in her mid-20s. The little boy reined his gray mule up beside her and stuck close, his large brown eyes abrim with curiosity as he stared at Josh and Muley, and with joy as he looked at the dogs.
She don't look old enough for a widow.
Wartime, it don't take long.
She's got no business going west again, a woman by herself.
It's her land. She's got no place else to go. No people left back in the States.
She can't work a farm.
Oh, she's stronger than she appears to be. You give her a few years and she'll look like my Rebecca yonder. Anyway, she's got determination. That counts for as much as muscle. And she's a fair, handsome woman. I expect there'll be bachelors enough more than willing to lend a hand. Say, you a bachelor, Buckaloo?
Provost tramped back in a few minutes, leading his sun-browned wife by one arm. The young widow followed a few paces behind.
Rebecca, Heather, this here is Joshua Buckaloo. I do believe that if we tried right hard, we could talk him and his party into throwing in with us as far as Hopeful Valley. We sure could use their company.
Mrs. Provost smiled pleasantly. She was a weathered but hardy woman who looked as if she could stand up to just about anything chance might decide to throw at her. Josh could feature Mrs. Provost's skin and game, dressing a baby, quoting scripture, and cussing the weather all at the same time.
Mr. Buckaloo may not know me, but I know him. Well, your farm was west of ours, a good way. One time you stopped at our cabin on a trip to San Felipe with the old surveyor, Jared Pounce. Whatever became of Mr. Pounce?
He was in the Alamo.
Oh, he was a good man. They were all good men.
She dropped her chin and turned away. Josh figured she was thinking of her husband. He vaguely recalled now, though he wouldn't have if she hadn't spoken up. Jared Pounce, always fond of good victuals, had called her the Corn Dodger Woman. She was smallish but strong. She had large blue eyes that would catch a man's gaze so that he didn't pay much attention to whether the rest of her was handsome or not. Josh would have considered her pleasant to look upon, though he would have hesitated to call her pretty. Maria Hernandez was pretty.
I remember. Y'all had you a nice place started.
Could have been a real good place. Lord knows my Jim tried. Seemed like bad luck always dogged him one way or another. Finally came the scrape, and the Mexicans caught up to us while we were trying to reach the Sabine. Do you remember my Jim?
Met him once is all. I'm afraid I wouldn't know him if he was to come riding up here.
Oh, I wish you would, but never will. Not ever again.
Wiley, we're gonna have fresh meat on the table tonight. See that fat sow yonder? She'd feed all of us for a month.
There's cured meat in the smokehouse. You leave the man's livestock alone.
They ain't yours.
They ain't yours either. You'll eat cured pork and you'll leave the sow to fetch more pigs.
Oh, some people act like they was meant to rule the whole blessed earth.
Yeah. For what it's worth, Buckaloo, they ain't no partners of mine.
They had their own wagon. They had guns. I figured we needed both.
I've been hoping when the war was over, we'd have a lot of new folks come in. Folks of the better sort.
These ain't the ones you've been waiting for, then. They was on the Sabine when the fighting was going on at San Jacinto. But the Lord makes all kinds.
And the buzzard as well as the eagle, the sparrow as well as the hawk. We best see if this place can be made comfortable for the women folk. They're gonna enjoy sleeping under a roof. God knows they probably won't find one when they get home.
Ramon Hernandez had pushed to his feet. He hobbled to the door, leaning on the crutch.
Yeah, a Mexican! Damn dirty Mexican!
Hold on, he's with us!
He'd expected momentary hostility. After the last few months, it was only natural, but he was not prepared for the fury in Quitman's tight-drawn face. He wrestled with the man who tried to wrench the rifle free of Josh's grasp. Instinctively, Josh knew Quitman would kill Ramon if given the chance. Sharp pain lancing through his stiff arm, Josh shoved the weapon forward, jamming it into Quitman's belly. He jerked it to one side, wresting it from the big hands as Quitman coughed for breath. Quitman kept grabbing for the rifle as Josh stepped back. Josh blew the powder out of the pan.
Quitman, I told you he's with us. He fought at San Jacinto, too.
Now, the hell you say? Which side was he on?
He was with the Once Again Company.
Quitman stopped trying then, his fists still clenched, his face dark. He stared at Ramon with eyes that wanted to kill.
You're not going to hurt him. He's my friend.
Quitman stared a moment longer at Ramon. Then the sudden rage began to ebb.
Yeah, to you maybe, but not to me. No Mexican will ever be a friend of mine again.
He turned and strode toward the wagons, leaving Josh standing there with the rifle in his hand.
Just say the word, O.C. We'll kill that Mexican for you.
Josh dropped Quitman's rifle to the ground and brought up his own, backing toward the cabin door, tensed and ready. The children watched open-mouthed. Aaron Provost had turned to watch Quitman to see what he would do, but Quitman did nothing except keep walking away. He strode past Sesame and McAfee as if they weren't there. He didn't stop until he reached the wagon that the widow had been driving. He leaned against a rear wheel, his back turned, one hand gripping a spoke as he wrestled with whatever private devil was tearing at him. Mrs. Winslow stood where she had been, except that she had turned away from Ramon, her face paled, still twisted with the shock. Josh thought now was the time to make one thing clear to everybody. He brought his rifle up across his chest, not pointing it at anybody, but letting it be seen.
Get this down and be damn sure you swallow it, all of you. We're willing to join you, but we don't have to. We got by before you came, and we can get by if you leave. If you want us, you got to take all three, me and Muley and Ramon. Anybody that moves a hand against Ramon has got me to whip.
We fought a war to get rid of them Mexicans.
Well, I hear it. You didn't fight anybody.
We stood guard at the river. Somebody had to. Ain't our fault we never got to kill no Mexicans.
You're not killing this one. You better get that through your head.
How long you known him, Buckaloo?
Since we first come down from Tennessee.
And you're sure of him?
As sure as I am of myself.
Well, you're a man who's pretty sure of himself. Me, I didn't worry over Mexicans one way or other before the war. They went their way and I went mine. Live and let live was the way I seen it. If you stand up for him, he's all right as far as I'm concerned. We agreed when we started out that if there come a disagreement, we'd take a vote. So we'll decide whether we want Buckaloo and his bunch to go with us. Whichever way it comes out, we don't bother Buckaloo's Mexican. How about it, you boys?
Damn Mexican is apt to stab a man in the back when he ain't looking. We ought to shoot him and be safe.
But you ain't. Is that understood? O.C., how about you?
Just keep him out of my sight.
Well, we'll wait a while to take that vote. Let O.C. have time to get hold of himself and think things through.
I reckon I already know how he'll vote.
Now, don't be too quick to put a judgment on him. That'd be as unfair to him as he was to your Mexican. O.C.'s got cause to hate. At least he thinks so. And he's a good man to have on your side. I don't think I'd want him against me.
Mr. Buckaloo?
Yes?
I didn't mean to set things off. He doesn't like me to scream. But I didn't expect to see him. He just bobbed up there all of a sudden. Well, he's the first Mexican I've seen since...
Don't blame yourself.
She turned and looked toward Ramon, and Josh could tell it was an effort for her. Ramon stood in the doorway. He hadn't moved an inch.
I'm sorry.
It is for nothing. I did not mean to scare you, Senora.
And I didn't mean to cause you any trouble.
Looks like trouble would have come whether you'd screamed or not.
I want you to know this, Mr. Buckaloo. If they'd let the women vote, I'd vote for you all to go along.
What about Quitman?
What about him?
You riding on his wagon and all, I thought.
O.C. Quitman is a kind man, inside. He saw I needed help, and he gave it. Well, in return, I've been taking care of his little boy. I still think for myself.
No offense meant, ma'am. I just didn't want to be the cause of trouble between you and him if there was anything...
Oh, there is not. Mr. Quitman is a gentleman.
I never thought no other way.
The new arrivals unloaded what they would need out of the wagons and hobbled the teams out in the meadow. When the men had finished the necessary chores, they gathered back beside the provost wagon. Aaron Provost cast one frowning glance at Josh and Ramon, then turned to the others.
There ain't no need us waiting no longer to take a vote. We just as well get the air cleared so this thing don't lie there and simmer between us all night.
How about the women? They get to vote?
You got any objection to it, O.C.?
Everything we do affects them the same as us. I say give them a vote.
That suits me. Dent, Wiley, how do y'all feel about taking Buckaloo and his friends?
The Mexican, too?
It includes him.
Then I say the hell with it.
We got on pretty good so far. We can do without them.
O.C.?
I say no.
That's three against. Well, I don't agree. I think we're apt to be glad we took them along, even if one of them is a Mexican. I don't reckon the good Lord asked him his preference when he was born. Whatever I say, Rebecca will agree to, so I cast our two votes for taking him with us. Heather, how do you vote?
Well, they ought to go with us. I vote yes.
Surprise flickered in Quitman's eyes, and disappointment.
Well, that winds us up in a tie. But what do we do now?
The silence hung so hot, Josh thought he could light a fuse with it. Finally, Quitman shrugged.
If the women folk feel better to have them come along, so be it. But keep that Mexican out of my way. I don't even want to look at him.
O.C., you have to understand that the war is over. As the book says, we shall beat our swords into plowshares, and the lion shall lie down with the lamb.
They may lie down together, but the lion will be the only one that gets up.
Ramon moved out of the cabin when the women moved in. Both were silently apologetic. Ramon hobbled out to the shed on his cane while Muley and Josh carried their few belongings.
Josh, how come they got it in for old Ramon the way they do?
Temper of the times, Muley. Me and you, if we was to go to Mexico, we'd get treated the same way.
Well, that don't seem hardly fair.
Nothing is fair in war, or in what follows after the war either. Not here, not in Mexico, not no place.
Old Provost was right when he said the Lord didn't give Ramon no preference. You reckon if he had, old Ramon would have chosen to be American like us?
That's hard to say, Muley.
Well, the Lord didn't give me no preference neither. You know something, Josh? If he had, I'd have sure been different than I am. I swear, I'd sure ask for a change.
You would?
Yes, sir. I'd have brown eyes instead of blue ones.
They dropped their gear on the packed ground in the rude shed. Ramon carefully lowered himself to a sitting position, stretching his leg out in front of him. His eyes were averted from Josh, but the quiet anger clung to him like heat around a bad stove.
You oughtn't to blame them too much, Ramon.
That is what I keep trying to tell myself, but I can't hear it.
We don't have to go with them. We'd figured all along on going by ourselves. We could get up and strike out in the morning and on to the Colorado River. We could even leave tonight.
The wagons are slow. Do you think they will run into trouble?
You can never tell about Comanches. They could be out west hunting buffalo, or they could be up this way hunting hair to braid their leggings with. Not likely there's any Mexican soldiers left, but you couldn't take an ironclad oath on that either.
And renegados?
Renegades you got any time you have a war. Sneaking around the brush, picking up the leavings, stealing what they can, killing if it comes handy.
This war is not the children's doing. I have a son of my own now. If harm came to these little ones, and I had not done what I could, I would not feel entitled to enjoy my own son.
Folks may treat you dirty, even when you help them.
I have been treated dirty before. I have not died from it.
Heather Winslow came with a can of steaming coffee and some fried bacon.
Mr. Buckaloo, Mr. Dodd, supper's ready up at the cabin. I brought this out for your friend. With his bad leg and all, I thought he'd rather not have to walk.
She glanced at Josh with apology in her eyes for the weak lie. Ramon accepted the food and coffee with dignity.
Gracias.
I am sorry, senor, for the way things are. Maybe they won't always be.
Do you think it will get better, Josh? No, it will get worse. It may get much worse.
They ate breakfast before daylight. Josh and Muley took theirs to the shed along with Ramon's. They had decided that if Ramon wasn't welcome in the cabin, they wouldn't go either. After breakfast, the men and boys hitched teams to the wagons and brought up the loose stock. Muley and Josh saddled their horses.
Saddle mine too, will you, Josh?
With that leg, you'd better ride in a wagon.
Which wagon? The farmer provost? He might take me. But his wagon is too loaded. McAfee and Sesum. They would not let me ride on their wagon even if I wanted to. And I do not want to.
There's still the wagon the widow drives.
She would say yes, but the wagon belongs to Quitman. No es verdad. I have no wish to cause her trouble from him. She's a widow. She will have need of him, I think.
I'll talk to Quitman.
The leg is not so bad that I cannot ride. I will not beg or owe a debt to anyone. No one can later say he did a big good for this Mexicano.
Rebecca Provost took charge of loading her wagon, and before long, the Provost and Winslow wagons were ready to go.
Y'all roll out. Me and Wiley, we got something to fix. We'll catch up with you directly.
Josh rode by their wagon and failed to see anything that appeared to be broken down. It would have suited him just as well if the two didn't catch up at all.
Yeah!
Aaron Provost flipped his lines and his team strained against the traces. Heather Winslow started her team and her wagon rolled out too. The children whooped and frisked along. The dogs followed the youngsters.
Youngins, chase those dogs off!
But nothing worked, not even chunking rocks at them. The dogs would tuck their tails between their legs, drop back a little, but continue to follow.
Looks like those dogs are bound and determined to go. They've been left here too long to want to stay.
I hate to get away with a man's dogs.
He may not come back. You don't mind your kids having the dogs, do you?
Well, they ain't likely to have much else when we get home.
War and hard times has robbed these youngins. A dog or two would be good for them.
Then let's don't worry about it. A hog or a cow is property, but a dog is a free agent. He goes where he wants to and does as he pleases. If it pleases him to tag along with your youngins, who's to blame?
Heather Winslow let the leather reins sag in her hands as the wagon creaked slowly through the greening grass. Patrick rode up, trying to push the lazy mule into a fast trot, but unable to get him out of a walk.
Sleepy, Patrick? Well, why don't you climb up here with me and take a nap?
All right, Mrs. Winslow.
She stopped the wagon to let him tie the mule at the tailgate. Climbing up, he stretched his short frame in the wagon seat, legs hanging over the edge, his head in the woman's lap. She flipped the reins and set the team to moving again. It had always been a disappointment to her that she'd never been able to give Jim a son. At least Quitman had the boy as a tangible reminder of his wife. Heather Winslow had only a memory of Jim and a piece of land that might have nothing left on it but ashes. Ahead yonder, a few days up the trail, waited the farm. There would be the fields to work, the garden to tend, the stock to take care of, if she had any left. In all probability, there would even be a cabin to build. The farm had been hard enough even when Jim was alive. But Jim was not here, and he never would be again. The terror still came to her, sometimes in a nightmare. She could only hope it would fade, that she could forget the awful morning Jim Winslow had made his final sacrifice to let Heather go on to safety. Seeing the Mexican patrol catching up, knowing the two of them could never make the timber, he had given his protesting wife the fastest horse, kissed her goodbye, and had ridden back with a rifle to hold up the patrol. Heather Winslow could see Osi Quitman now, riding the point position far out ahead of the wagons. He rode now as he always rode, alone. She remembered the way she had seen him the morning after Jim had died. Near exhaustion, she'd come out of the timber and into a clearing. A bewildered little boy had stood there by a wagon, and a man sat with his head in his hands beside a newly filled grave. Easing down from the saddle, she had reached Osi Quitman before he had even sensed that anyone was near. Looking up, he saw she was a woman.
Oh, God. Why couldn't you have come sooner?
Brokenly, he told her he had just buried his wife and a newborn son. The runaway scrape had killed her. It had been too much. The hard trip, the rough flight barely ahead of the Mexican army at the time for her delivery.
There was no one to help her, no one but me.
After a while, when he had had time to think, he had decided what to do.
A boy needs a woman's care. I need your horse, and you need my wagon. So you take the wagon, ma'am, and get my boy to the Sabine. I'll take the horse and catch up to Houston's army.
How'll I get the boy back to you, and the wagon?
I'll find you. You stay put, the other side of the river. When the fighting is over, I'll come and find you.
And if you don't come?
I got folks in the States. You can send the boy to them, and the wagon is yours.
He gave her what little money he had and rode off across the valley and out of sight. All that was behind her now. What mattered was the times that lay ahead. She hated to think of them, but she knew she must. The thought of operating the farm alone was staggering. She didn't know how she could do it all by herself. But what else could she do? Hire a man? With what? How could she pay him? All the cash money she owned in this world probably wouldn't add up to $3. There was one possibility, of course, though even to think about it so early was brazen, and her conscience plagued her. She knew it must be considered shameful, her husband just a few weeks dead, but she could marry again. Joshua Buckaloo rode close to the wagons. Heather Winslow found herself looking at him often, wondering. Muley came up once and took a long look at little Patrick, still asleep with his head on Heather's lap. He tipped his hat and smiled.
Sure do look peaceful, don't he, ma'am?
He'll be with you again directly, when he gets his nap.
I just wanted to be sure he was all right, ma'am. Didn't ever want to see him sick or nothing.
Muley turned to ride back to the other youngsters. Heather Winslow's gaze followed him. Joshua Buckaloo dropped back beside her wagon.
Muley's a good hand with kids, Mrs. Winslow. He'll take care of the boy.
I'm glad you two came along. Little Patrick thinks the sun rises and sets with Muley.
Sometimes I think maybe it does. Times I'd swap places with him and never look back.
You've known him a long time?
Since back home in Tennessee. He needed a friend. So did I.
What about him?
Ramon and me? We were neighbors. And we were friends long before the war was ever thought of. We decided to stay friends no matter what.
Hasn't been easy, has it?
Been a strain. I lost my brother Thomas at Goliad. For a while, it was hard for me to look at Ramon and see anything but his brown skin. But I had to get it through my head that he wasn't no way to blame for whatever Santa Ana did. I had to get it straight that I wasn't just looking at a Mexican. I was looking at an old friend. It wasn't him that had changed. It was the times. Ramon worries you, don't he?
Well, I know better, but I can't help it. The feeling crawls over my skin every time I look at him. I know it wasn't his fault about my gym, but the feeling is there just the same.
You tried to be kind, taking him to supper, trying to save him from the treatment some of them would have given him in the cabin.
Guilty conscience, I suppose. I knew I was doing him wrong, and something inside of me was trying to make up for it. I hope he understands. I can't help the way I feel.
He understands, ma'am.
Josh pulled away and drifted out toward Ramon Hernandez. Heather Winslow watched him from under the shadow of her bonnet, wondering what kind of a farmer he was. Osi Quitman was riding point up ahead of the wagons, In late afternoon, he turned back, looking over his shoulder, his worried manner indicating something was wrong. Josh rode forward and met him abreast of the provost wagon.
Men up yonder, a horseback. 5 or 6 at least, maybe more. Indians?
When's dinner? I'm hungry.
Not Indian. And from the looks of them, I'd say probably not Mexican either. They're moving in our direction.
There could be settlers like us on their way home.
Possible. But if they was, they'd be moving in a different direction. Unless, of course, they seen us and decided to come down and get acquainted.
Tensing, Josh reached down and brought up his own rifle. In the backwash of every war, roam the scavengers, feeding on other people's misery.
Aaron, look how far the youngins have dropped back.
Muley, you go fetch them kids up there and do it in a hurry. Leave the stock. We can pick them up later. Get them kids to the wagons before those riders reach here.
What's happening, Josh?
Muley, I said move!
Muley spurred away, but he kept looking back. Sesame and McAfee had lagged with their wagon. Now they caught the excitement and saw the riders. They brought their team up in a hurry.
What's happening?
We got company coming.
Rebecca stood up in the wagon bed, looking back worriedly toward the children. Heather Winslow stopped her wagon.
What do we do?
Thing is, to see that every gun we got is loaded and in hand. Rifles, shotguns, whatever we have.
If they ain't Mexicans and they ain't Indians, what do we need to worry about? War's over.
Not everywhere it ain't. See after your guns.
Josh quickly took inventory. He and Quitman each had a rifle. Provost had a shotgun. McAfee and Sesame each had rifles. An extra rifle lay in the provost wagon. It belonged to the oldest provost boy, Daniel, but he was back yonder with the youngsters. Josh glanced in that direction, then once more at the approaching horsemen. It was too late. The kids weren't going to reach the wagons before the visitors did.
Mrs. Provost, you better take charge of your son's rifle. You may have to use it.
Lord, not me. I can do lots of things, but I can't shoot a man.
Well, have it ready anyway.
Josh glanced back at Heather Winslow, who was watching the children, her fist balled against her mouth. Josh dug a Mexican pistol out of his blanket roll and loaded it. It was his first intention to hand it to Mrs. Winslow, but on second thought, he doubted she would use it. Better he keep it, for he would use it. The riders were close now. There were 9. Josh toted up the odds and didn't like them. One of the riders peeled away from the rest and spurred out to intercept Muley and the youngsters. Josh felt his heart go down. Muley had a rifle with him, but he wouldn't use it. Josh found Ramon watching the youngsters. He could read the thoughts in the Mexican's mind. Ride to them.
Forget it, Ramon. They got mischief on their minds, and they act like it. They never let you live long enough to reach them kids. Sit tight. We'll need all our guns right here in a bunch.
The riders slowed to a trot, then to a walk. They approached in a ragged line, some carrying pistols, some carrying rifles, one toting a Mexican escopeta. The man who appeared to be the leader pulled a length ahead and raised his hand to signal a halt. He moved a little closer, but not close enough to reach.
Howdy! Nice outfit you folks got here. Heading west, I take it?
We're going back to our homes. We understand the Mexican soldiers have all gone. It's safe now.
Not altogether, it ain't. There's still a chance some straggling Mexicans are left, and then there's always the Indians. Y'all think about the Indians? Man thinks he's got everything going on a nice downhill grade, and then some sneaking Comanche goes and takes his hair. It ain't right. Good folks having to fret over things like that. So us boys here, we've done gone and formed us a kind of frontier rifle company. We're here to kill us any stray Mexicans and Indians we come across and make this country safe for the good folks. This one here a prisoner of yours? We'd be right tickled to take care of him.
One of your men has stopped our children. I'd like to know what he's done that for.
That's Bo. He's partial to youngins. Them is good-looking wagons. They're loaded, too. Looks like y'all have come out of the war pretty good.
Everything that's in these wagons is rightfully ours.
Well, I didn't go to make it look like we doubt you none. Anybody can tell you're quality folks. What I'm getting to is, we're poor men, all of us. You can see that for yourselves. There ain't nobody paying us nothing or feeding us nothing for the protection we're giving folks and their property. We gotta live off the land or starve, and starving ain't much to our liking, I guarantee.
Anybody authorize you to give all this protection?
We're doing it on our own. Not everybody can fight with old General Sam and get the glory of it. Some has got to do the dirty little jobs that don't even rate a thank you or a howdy-do. We ain't complaining none, but we figure you owe us, friends.
Owe you what?
It depends. Depends on what all you got in them wagons.
He made a move toward the wagon which carried the Widow Winslow.
Well, that's as far as you go, friend.
Well, I don't believe y'all quite understood the situation yet.
We understand it. You come to rob us.
Not rob? Rob ain't a good word. Commandeer is better. Got a military ring to it, commandeer does. Sounds nice and legal, too.
There ain't nothing legal about you. You ain't militia. You probably never fired a shot at a Mexican unless he was some helpless settler or a straggling soldier you caught out by himself. You got nothing coming to you from us. If you're hungry, there's game enough around here. You got no call to starve.
Now, we intended to handle this nice, but it looks like y'all are bound and determined not to have it that way. So we'll have it your way instead. You'll notice there's more of us than there is of you. And you'll remember, we got one man down yonder close herding that bunch of youngins. Now, I sent old Bo on purpose, because he don't shrink from nothing. Bo don't, mm-mm. If I was to tell him to put his pistol up to some youngin's head and blow his brains out, he'd do it. Not wink an eye. He's mean, Bo is. Oh! I do believe y'all are getting to see things the way I do. Women always seem to understand quicker than men.
What do you want from us?
Well, now we ain't sure till we see what you got. We find we're needing a little bit of everything.
Josh knew that was what they would take. Everything.
You let our youngins come on up and join us. Then we'll talk to you.
You'll talk a right smart better the way things is. Bo will take good care of them.
We gotta have a few minutes to talk this over.
I will give you a few minutes then. Here's our proposition. You turn them wagons over to us and walk away from here. You get yourselves good and clear of the wagons and we'll let the kids come up. Afoot, of course. We find we sure do need us some horses.
You want our guns, too.
Naturally. We need more guns. How else we gonna fight Mexicans and Comanches?
He started to rein the horse around.
We'll give you 3 minutes to talk it over. If you ain't made up your mind by then, I'll have to send a little message down the bow. And I'd sure hate to do that. Like I told you, Bow is mean.
He rode off a short distance, he and his men. Then they turned to watch. But at least it was too far for them to hear.
You thinking the same as me, Buckaloo?
There ain't no thinking to be done. They outnumber us, and they got the kids. We can't take no risks with them youngins.
Years ago, when me and Muley and my brother Thomas were coming to Texas from Tennessee, we ran into this kind of trouble over in the Redlands.
Now, what did you do?
We killed them before they could kill us. They were sure going to, and if we walk away from these wagons, we're all dead, us and the kids. Don't you see, Aaron? They can't steal a bunch of slow wagons and leave us to tell about it. Too much risk of people finding us before they've had time to get in the clear. As soon as they get us afoot and helpless, they'll kill us all and make out like it was Indians or Mexicans. It's the only thing they could do.
They got us outnumbered.
Only by 3, and they've sent one man down to the kids. That leaves 2 more men here than we got. Bad luck that you and your oldest boy and Muley both got cut off. We got to make do without them.
Quitman looked toward Ramon.
What about him? Can he shoot?
He can pick your teeth at 50 yards.
If every one of us hits a man, that leaves 2 of them alive here and us with empty rifles. Chances are one or maybe both of them will turn tail and run.
You mean we're just gonna shoot them down? Now that don't hardly seem Christian.
What they're figuring on doing to us ain't Christian either. And remember, they'll do it to the women and the children same as us. You're damned right we'll shoot them down.
Dent Sessom and Wiley McAfee had pulled their wagon in close so they could listen. Cold sweat broke out on their faces.
What if 2 or 3 of us shoot at the same man?
Yeah, we gotta parcel them out. McAfee, you get the one with that Mexican-looking sombrero. Aaron can shoot the one with the beaver hat. Hernandez will take the one sitting next to him, the one with the crooked neck that looks like he'd been hung and cut down early. Buckaloo can take the one on the end, and I'll get the man that done all the talking.
The children? That hombre Bo. Somebody got to shoot Bo.
I was figuring him for Sesame. From where you're at, Sesame, you got the best chance to shoot Bo. You can rest your rifle barrel across that stack of goods and draw a fine bead.
That would leave three men alive, even if everybody hit his target.
I sure as sin don't like it.
What they got in mind, you'd like a lot less. Everybody better shoot straight. Kill them with the first shot, and you won't have anything to do over.
The 3 minutes passed, and the scavengers closed in, fanning out to form a semicircle. Every one of them carried a gun of some kind, and every gun was ready. The leader was coming close to the wagons, so sure was he of surrender. That would make an easy shot for Quitman, anyway. Josh let his attention settle on the man at the end, who was to be his target. He hoped the man wouldn't see it in his eyes. The men were so close now that he knew he couldn't miss. Cold sweat made the rifle slick in his hands. He felt the man must see the tension drawing his face tight, and he hoped it would be taken for fear.
You made up your minds yet?
We have. Now!
Through a cloud of black powder smoke drifting out from the wagons, Josh watched his man jerk backward, clutching his stomach, then slide off and crumple in an awkward heap. Another man crawled on the ground, going limp as a terrified horse trampled him. The smoke was heavy, but Josh could see that at least four men had been left untouched. Someone had completely missed his target. Two of the ones not hit wheeled their horses and ran, coattails flapping as they spurred in panic. Josh saw a rifle flash from one of the two men who were left, but he didn't turn to see if one of his party was hit. He kicked his horse and moved quickly through the smoke, drawing the pistol out of his waistband. Osie Quitman swung his rifle barrel, clubbing one rider out of the saddle. Josh saw the other one holding the escopeta, trying to find a target in the gray smoke. Josh brought up the pistol and squeezed the trigger. The man went down. Josh wheeled. On the wagon seat, Aaron Provost sat frozen, the smoking shotgun in his hands, as he stared in hypnotic dismay at the renegade in the beaver hat writhing on the ground. This was probably the first man Provost had ever shot.
Help me, somebody! He's got me!
On the far side of the wagon, Wiley McAfee and one of the Redlanders rolled in the grass. A knife blade caught the sunshine for an instant. McAfee had failed to kill his man, and now he was fighting for his life. Josh remembered the extra rifle in the Provost wagon, the one that belonged to the oldest boy. He made a move, but Ramon had thought of it before him. Ramon was closer, and he got to it first.
Help me, Mexican! Help before he kills me!
He had never even bothered to learn Ramon's name. Ramon climbed out of his saddle and onto the provost wagon, moving awkwardly because of his bad leg. He grabbed the rifle, and for a moment, Josh thought he was going to shoot the renegade who had McAfee down. But Ramon brought the rifle to a level and propped it across a box to fire it. Josh saw then what he was aiming at. Sesame had missed his shot at the man called Bo. Now Bo pursued the little provost girl, evidently trying to gain a hostage.
For God's sake, help before he kills me!
But Ramon ignored him. Beads of sweat broke on the dark forehead as the barrel followed the moving Bo. Bo slumped, grabbing at his horse's mane. In an instant, Provost's oldest boy and Muley together had pounced on him and dragged him to the ground. Josh ran to help McAfee, but he was too late. The renegade plunged the knife into McAfee's throat. Quitman got there first. He leaned down and jabbed the butt of his empty rifle savagely against the renegade's head. The man went slack, and Quitman clubbed him again. His skull broke like a melon.
Wiley! What's happened, Wiley? Wiley!
Wiley McAfee lay struggling as his lifeblood spread a stain in the grass. His hands reached up in fearful supplication, but no one could help him. Sesame crouched over him a moment in shock, then grabbed up McAfee's fallen rifle and frenziedly began to club the fallen renegade.
Sesame, that won't help none. He's already dead.
I heard Wiley holler to the Mexican for help. Why didn't he help him? Answer me, Mexican. How come you didn't help him? You wanted him dead.
The children. McAfee was a man. First came the children.
You had a rifle in your hands, and you stood there and let him die.
Sesame, it was your job to shoot Bo. You missed him and left them youngins in his hands. Ramon had to finish your job. If you'd done what you were supposed to, McAfee wouldn't have had to die.
That Mexican could have saved him. He let him be killed.
Sesame made a move forward with the rifle barrel gripped in his hands. Josh caught him by the shoulder, spun him around, and struck him on the chin. Sesame sprawled. Josh picked up the fallen rifle to keep it out of Sesame's hands. Over the hill, he could see two men riding away, still spurring. The wise thing would be to go after them to make sure the whole den was killed out. But here, with the smoke still thick enough to choke a man, he was glad to let them go. Muley and the oldest provost boy rode up with the children and with the wounded beau staggering at the end of a rope.
There wasn't nothing I could do, Josh. He took my rifle before I even knowed what was going on.
You did fine, Muley. So did you, Daniel.
We wasn't afraid of him, Mr. Buckaloo. Quick as we got the chance, we grabbed onto him.
He's fixing to kill the children. That's what he told us. Said if anything went wrong, he was going to kill them off one by one. Like he'd wring chicken necks. He was trying to catch the girl when somebody shot him.
Your friends are dead, most of them. You know any reason we ought to have mercy on you?
I'm bleeding to death. You can't let a man stand here and bleed to death.
No, we can't.
Bleed. Oh.
Bo jerked, stared in horror till his eyes went blank, then he pitched forward in a heap.
That's what he was fixing to do to your youngins. What you waiting for? Any others still alive, we better do the same to them. No use them healing up and pulling this on somebody else.
We're not the law.
Well, aren't we? There ain't no law right now except the law we make. Mexican government is gone. We got no Texas government except on paper.
There's still God's law.
God ain't come west of the Sabine River.
You're not going to kill anybody else, Quitman.
You figure on stopping me?
If I have to.
Quitman's gaze could cut steel. All Josh knew was to stare back. They watched each other like buck deer trying to decide whether to lower their horns and fight.
You could take lessons from that Mexican of yours. He knows when to let his blood run cold.
Provost came out of his daze and climbed shakily down from his wagon. They all scouted around, picking up the guns and looking over the blood-soaked renegades, scattered in a grisly semicircle where they had fallen. They all appeared dead except the one who had worn the beaver hat. The hat lay crushed beneath him. Provost had shot him, but nervousness had spoiled his aim. The blue whistlers had shattered the leg.
Leave him be and he'll bleed to death.
This one of all the renegades showed no whiskers.
He's a young'un is all. Not much older than Daniel Provost.
A young'un can kill you as dead as an old one. He's part of that trash.
He's not old enough to know what he's doing.
The hell he ain't! He's old enough to kill a man. That means he's old enough for somebody to kill him and not worry over it none.
Searching the lad, Josh found a knife, but no other weapon. He slit the shot-torn trouser leg.
Busted in a little bitty pieces. We gotta do something.
Leave him.
He's just a kid.
We was all kids one time or another. I knew right from wrong by the time I was 6. He's grown up with a wolf pack, Buckaloo. You can't change a wolf's habits. Save him now and he'll kill again. Leave him die. It's best for everybody.
We can't.
While ago, you helped me plan how we'd kill them all. Didn't bother you then.
He had a gun in his hands. Now it's different. He's helpless.
You think he'd have fixed you up? He'd have cut your throat.
Oh, see, it was me that shot him. We gotta give him a chance.
Do it then. But remember, if you save him, he'll like as not be at your throat first chance he gets.
Muley, you gather the young'uns and take them to the shade of that tree yonder to wait and rest. No use them being here at this slaughterhouse.
I'll help you with the boy, Josh. I feel like it's my responsibility. What do you want me to do?
Let's take a better look at this wound.
Josh ripped away the trouser leg, his brow furrowing. It was even worse than he thought. A chill crawled up his back. Looking away, he saw that Aaron's boy Daniel had taken it upon himself to round up the renegade's horses. Nobody had had to tell him. And Josh remembered how Daniel had pounced on Bo the moment Ramon's rifle ball struck. Good boy, that Daniel. Aaron and Rebecca had pointed him right. Pity there hadn't been somebody to point this boy right.
Aaron, why don't you look through them saddlebags and find out if any of them had a bottle of whiskey or something? This boy's going to need it. He's going to need a plenty of it.
Josh made a tourniquet of the trouser leg, then walked to the Widow Winslow's wagon where O.C. Quitman had his arms around his little son, Patrick.
Mrs. Winslow, could you get a fire going and heat some water, please? We're going to need it directly.
Aaron found a couple of bottles. Josh removed the stopper from one of them and tilted it up to drink.
Man who'd sell that stuff would club his grandmother, but it'll do the job. Here, boy, drink. Drink it all.
By the time the water was boiling, the boy was floating away in a drunken stupor. Josh had whetted his knife until the blade was keen. He held it in the boiling water, and glanced at Aaron.
You hold him.
The boy surged against Aaron, then fell back in a faint. Cold sweat broke out on Josh's forehead. Presently, the job was done. Heather Winslow fled while Josh and Aaron cauterized the stump. Then she forced herself forward with some homespun cotton cloth.
You'll need bandages.
Quitman and Dent Sesum placed Wiley McAfee's body in the Sesum wagon.
Quitman, we gotta put that boy in a wagon, too. We want to use yours.
What if I said no?
You and me would have to fight. And when it was over, we'd put the boy in your wagon anyhow.
You got a soft heart, Buckaloo, and a soft head to match. Like as not, it'll get you killed someday. But go ahead. If it's all right with Mrs. Winslow, you can use the wagon.
Josh and Muley and Aaron gathered old leaves into a soft mat, spread blankets, and placed the wounded boy on them. Dent Sesum and O.C. Quitman carried shovels up to a high point and dug a grave for Wiley McAfee. After supper, Aaron read from the Bible, they all bowed their heads, and Josh watched Sesum carve McAfee's name onto a cross Muley had fashioned. He suspected Sesum had misspelled the name, but he saw no need in making an issue of it.
Did McAfee have any relatives you know of? Is there somebody we ought to send a letter to?
We was partners, him and me. There wasn't nobody else.
Bound to be somebody. A mother, maybe, or a sister or brother. Somebody who ought to get the stuff that belonged to him.
We was partners. Whatever belonged to him belongs to me now. Everything in that wagon, it belongs to me. Just me. You ain't gonna take it away or give away what's mine.
I had no intention.
I'm warning you, Buckaloo. You touch one thing on that wagon, and there'll be big trouble. It's all mine now. Do you hear?
Josh turned away, disgust welling in him. He picked up a shovel and started toward the wagon. Aaron Provost trudged out to meet him, his shoulders slumped, his face grim.
Don't put the shovel away, Josh.
The boy?
He died fighting.
At least we tried.
It was me that shot him, Josh. How am I going to carry that burden? He was a boy, like my Daniel.
No, Aaron, not like your boy. This one was suckled on wolf's milk, taught to kill like an animal. It wasn't your fault. Blame goes on the people who raised him that way.
The days were long, and the miles passed slowly under the wheels. But gradually, the Spanish moss country of the coastal lands fell behind them, and the gently rising prairies marked the way into the higher, drier inland regions of Texas. Across the Brazos, past the charred ruins of Stephen F. Austin's San Felipe, across the San Bernard, and finally west to the Colorado.
We're getting close to home country now, to the place we all called Hopeful Valley. I'm right uneasy, Josh, how Quitman's gonna take it when he first sets eyes on his farm. You can tell lately he's done a lot of thinking about her.
The farther they moved across the prairies, the more uneasy Josh became about Comanches. The only horse tracks they had encountered crossing their trail had proved to be bands of wild mustangs grazing free. While Quitman rode his solitary point, Josh and Ramon would each move far out on the flank, watching. But they saw no Indians, no sign of any. A day came when Quitman rode forward to the top of a hill and sat his horse there, unmoving. After a long time, Josh became uneasy and loped up from his flank position. From on the other side, he could see Ramon follow his lead. At the hilltop, Josh stopped and looked down upon a small field, evidently plowed last winter, but now growing up in weeds. His searching gaze picked up a small, crooked stream, its green banks lined with massive pecan trees. Finally, just above the stream, he saw the black skeleton of a cabin, the charred logs of its tumbled walls spread out like burned ribs.
Your place?
Quitman made no answer. Josh thought he had never seen a face so sad.
Cabin's easy to build. As soon as we all get our field work caught up with, we'll help you put it back up.
Cabin don't mean nothing to me. Mary is what mattered. There ain't no way to bring her back. Wasn't much, but she loved it there. Had her some flowers in front of it and a garden out back. Well, you see that square plot with the log fence? I remember how aggravated she'd get when the coons would come slipping in at night and tear the garden up. She'd take a broom and chase them out. She wouldn't hurt one for the world. And she'd go out next morning and try to fix the damage. She could make anything grow, Mary could. She had the touch of life about her. She could take a sick plant or a sick animal or a sick bird, didn't matter which, and she could make it live. When her own time comes, she couldn't help herself. Whatever touch she had, it wouldn't work for her.
It was a hard go of luck, and I reckon there wasn't anything anybody could do.
There was somebody could have done something, but they wouldn't.
His head turned slowly, and Josh followed his gaze southward. He thought he saw a wisp of light-colored smoke beyond the trees.
Faustino Marquez. Buckaloo, you want to do me a favor?
If I can.
Come along with me, then. I want you to stand back and keep quiet. I don't want you to interfere or get in the way of whatever I do, except for one thing. The last second before I kill him, I want you to stop me. Let me burn him out. Let me beat him to within an inch of his life, but don't let me kill him.
I don't know. Before I'm party to this, I better know how come you hate him so bad.
Quitman glanced in Ramon's direction.
I'd rather you didn't go with us.
Ramon looked at Josh, his eyes asking.
It's all right, Ramon. I'll go with him. Maybe you better go help watch out for the wagons anyway.
Quitman touched his heels to his horse's ribs and started down the hill toward the smoke. Josh hurried to follow.
Quitman, you didn't answer me.
Time I'm finished, you'll know why I can't stand the sight of a Mexican. Not even that pet of yours. Faustino Marquez as good as killed my wife. He could have saved her, but he wouldn't lift a hand. 2 years we was neighbors. Faustino was the hungry kind, never satisfied with what he had, taking everything else he could get. A grasper. Whatever he needed, he'd come borrowing from us, and I'd have hell getting it back. But the times him or his wife got sick, Mary would go over and take care of them. The big fever come last year, Mary stayed there most of a week, nursing Alicia Marquez, pulling her back after the fever all but took her away. Faustino swore if there was ever anything Mary needed, he'd give up his life to help her. Well, the time come. We had another baby on the way when the war commenced. I went off to help fight. After the Alamo and Goliad, when the scrape started, I got leave to go home and see after Mary. All our Americano friends had packed up and left. They tried to get Mary to go with them, but she'd waited for me. I got home and found her so close to her time that it was dangerous for her to travel. Santa Ana's Mexicans was almost on top of us by then. I was afraid riding in a wagon would kill her. Being Mexicans themselves, Faustino and his wife didn't see no need in them running from Santa Ana. I decided that if Mary stayed with the Marquez family, the soldiers wouldn't bother her none. So I put her and Patrick in the wagon and took them over there. Faustino met me at the door with a gun in his hand. Said for us damned Americanos to get off his land. I told him he owed Mary protection, but he said if we didn't get away, he'd shoot us all, and maybe Santa Ana would give him a medal. Said this land was for the Mexicans anyway, and the only reason they'd ever let any Americanos in here in the first place was to help them fight off the Comanches. Said our place was his place from now on. We rode all that day and through the night and hid in a thicket at daylight. It kept raining and washing our tracks out behind us. While we was in the thicket, a bunch of Mexican soldiers come riding by trying to find us. And up front helping them was Faustino Marquez. We traveled by night and hid by day, but it turned out like I was afraid it would. Mary's time came and the trip had been too much for her. She died hard. The baby never drew a breath. Yeah, I reckon you know the rest of it.
Heather Winslow told me.
Mrs. Winslow was in a lot the same shape as I was. She'd lost her husband, and I'd lost my wife. I gave her Patrick in the wagon and went on to find Sam Houston. I'd made up my mind to kill as many Mexicans as I could. And I did, Buckaloo. I made them pay.
But it wasn't enough, was it?
No, it wasn't enough. All the time I knew Faustino was still here. I laid awake nights thinking about all the slow, hard ways I could use to kill him. None of them was good enough. Once he was dead, he wouldn't feel anything. And I wanted him to feel. Then I got to thinking about how greedy he was. I decided the way to punish him most was to run him off of his place with nothing but the shirt on his back and let him spend the rest of his miserable life remembering what he had thrown away. That's a way you can kill a man and still leave him alive.
That's what you want me to help you do?
Not help me. I'll do it all myself. You just be there to make sure I don't forget myself and kill him. Agreed?
I reckon you got cause enough to hate him. But I'll stop you whenever I think it's time.
The Marquez house lay beyond a recently tilled field. It was of stone, Mexican style, rather than the log type the Americano settlers favored. Smoke curled from the chimney, and Josh thought he saw movement inside. No one came out. Quitman's eyes narrowed.
Faustino! Faustino, you drag yourself out here and be damn quick!
A broad-hipped Mexican man opened the door. He stared at Quitman with the horrified eyes of a man who has seen the dead spring to life.
Quitman!
Thought they'd got me, didn't you? Thought I'd never come back. That's my plow you got, and that chair under the arbor. It's one I made for Mary.
All this I said for you, Quitman. I said to myself that Santa Anna, he burned everything. I bring it over here, and I save it for my good friend Quitman and his wife. I save it for you, Quitman.
You stole it. You didn't think I'd be back.
Oh, no, Quitman. I no steal from you. You and me, we're friends.
So friendly you led the Mexican troops to try and find us? You wanted us dead, Faustino. You wanted to steal everything for yourself.
Long time we are friends. You and me, your wife, my Alicia. Do you forget that?
You're the one that forgot it.
Please, don't kill me, Quitman, please.
You killed my Mary. Why shouldn't I kill you?
No, I did nothing.
You did nothing. And that is why she's dead. You owed her a debt, but you let her die. Now I owe you, Faustino, and I'm going to pay.
The butt of his rifle caught Marquez in the stomach. The man bent forward, arms coming around instinctively for protection. Quitman jabbed the butt straight forward, hitting him in the face. Marquez stumbled backward into the house. Quitman followed him in. Josh moved quickly through the open door. He saw a plump Mexican woman cowering in a corner, face covered with her hands, but her fingers spread enough that she could see. What Quitman did to Marquez was slow, methodical, and brutal. He drove him back against a stone wall, and there proceeded to beat him with his fists. Each time Marquez slipped to the packed earth floor, Quitman hauled him up again. Marquez made only a small attempt to defend himself. About the time Josh was preparing to step in and stop it, Quitman flung Marquez halfway across the room.
Get up, Faustino! Get up and get out!
Marquez pushed himself up onto hands and knees, staring without comprehension.
No entiendo!
I said get out! You and your wife, get your oxen and hook up your carreta and go! Don't you ever come back!
This is our home!
It was your home. You're leaving.
Where? We have nowhere to go!
Quitman strode across the room and hauled Marquez to his feet.
You hear me, Faustino?
See?
If I was you, I wouldn't stop till I got plumb the other side of the Rio Grande. Don't stop in Bar, because I might go there sometime. Don't stop at the Nueces, because I might be there sometime too. I promise you this, Faustino. If I ever see you again, anytime, any place, I'll kill you on sight.
On hands and knees, the Mexican scrambled for the door, not pushing to his feet until he was outside. The woman began gathering up clothes and cooking utensils. Quitman raised his hand.
Leave them.
She stared in disbelief.
Leave them! I'm giving you Faustino. That's all you're leaving here with.
You're making it awful tough. How are they going to live?
That's their problem. They didn't give a damn what happened to Mary.
Josh watched somberly from the doorway as the Mexican yoked his oxen to a high-wheeled wooden cart. The couple left without so much as the old rifle.
They might run into Comanches.
They might.
They'd have no chance at all.
They'd have all the chance they'd gave Mary. Damn near everything in here, the chairs, the table, all of it come from our house. while Steno cleaned the place out, then he burned it.
So now you've cleaned him out.
Clean as a hound's tooth.
Quitman walked toward the homemade wooden bed. Josh guessed by the way he looked at it that it had been his and Mary's. Quitman picked up a pillow and let his fingers run over the fine embroidery work. And he turned away, his head down. Josh decided to leave the cabin and give the man his moments of peace, if ever he had any. They rode in silence across the field and over the hill, back to Quitman's own place. Quitman moved his horse in a slow walk around the rock pens, the burned cabin, the weed-grown garden. He kept his eyes away from Josh's, and Josh tried not to intrude. He held back, willing to listen if it would help, but not wanting to put himself in where he wasn't needed. At length, Quitman reined up, shoulders slumped.
I don't think I can do it, Buckaloo.
Do what?
Live here again. I could come here and work the land, maybe, but I couldn't live here anymore. There's too much to try to take me back, and there's no going back. Like as not, I'd go out of my mind.
What do you think you'll do?
Texas owes me free land for my soldiering. Didn't you say there's good land up your way?
There's a lot that ain't been claimed.
Then I'll pick me a piece of it by and by and put in my claim. This place I'll keep for my boy Patrick.
You'll be welcome. There's just one thing.
You know, what's that?
You'll have Mexican neighbors again. You'll have Ramon Hernandez. It won't be like it was with Faustino. Push Ramon and he'll fight. What's more, I'll help him.
I got a notion I'll have to fight you sooner or later anyhow.